The grant process. So how do you get started writing a grant? So these are the elements this week that we've talked about that go into a grant, but how do you actually get started? What's the first thing you want to do if you're going to write a grant? If you've already identified the potential competition you want to apply for, the first thing you need to do is review the solicitation, or the CFP, the call for proposals, and read those guidelines and that certification, and do these two things that are so important, I cannot tell you how important. Make sure you're actually eligible to apply for it. I have heard and have colleagues that have written entire grants and then found out that they're the wrong staff or classification to apply for it. Not a good scenario. And actually, make sure that your project is actually relevant to the program and the competition. Trying to shoehorn your project into a competition just for the sake of getting money is a nightmare. Don't try it. It's not good. That doesn't mean you can't bend your project to a competition, but there should be at least some sort of relationship between your project and the competition itself. So we did this with the Digital Media and Learning Grant, where we had a project that was about digital learning. The competition was a little bit sideways from our philosophy. We wanted to attempt to see if they would actually broaden the philosophy and the definitions they were using by submitting our project. They didn't. We got rejected. We moved on. Don't be afraid to contact the program officer if you have any questions. If you are not sure your project qualifies for this competition, email them and ask. This is where having an abstract or some sort of statement of your project can be very useful. Take the requirements from the solicitation and make them into sections and headers in your narrative. Do not try and be cute and create cool titles. Do not try and be cute and make it all one big long paragraph, which I do all the time on VH startups. If it says narrative, that's the header. If it says environmental scan, that's the header. That's because when somebody reviews, they are required to check off that you have complied with all the grant requirement sections. You have a budget, you have a narrative, you have a justification. They have to go through and sign off on that. You make it easy for the program officers if you use those headers so you don't get dinged for not being compliant. They like it when you're quick for them. Make a list of the required parts of all the application. In the case of NEH and NSF, it's almost always there's some sort of summary section that's outside of the narrative that goes on your transmittal form and that they want on their little NEH guidelines thing that you submit in grants.gov, which is like their submission system. They want references, citations, bibliographies, you know, show that you're actually engaged with the scholarship. Bios. NEH usually has a requirement of a 2-page bio for the people that are in the project. That's not just the staff, that's also advisory board members, that's also people who potentially are like writing letters of recommendation for you. Those are also potentially people like if you've pre-selected participants for your workshop. They want to see bios of those people you've already pre-selected. A data management plan, there's a whole host of requirements. The solicitation will be very explicit about what requirements you must meet. Make sure you meet those requirements. You'd be amazed the number of people who don't put in something and then are surprised when their grant gets rejected and they don't get awarded. NEH will not call you and say, you didn't put in all the pieces, you should really do that. They will call you if you forgot a single piece, where it's a mistake that you obviously overlooked something, and they'll give you usually 24 hours to get that into them. But grants.gov will check to make sure that each of the files that you submit complies with the requirements. And if you submit a budget justification that actually has no text on the page, grants.gov still thinks you're compliant because there's a file that says budget justification or budgets. When NEH opens it, they're going to find there's nothing there. Just be careful and pay attention to those things. In terms of your university, meet your coordinator before your first external grant. I literally, when I first start my jobs places, I go in and I find out who it is that's assigned to my center or my division or my department. And I just go and I say, hi, how are you? I'm so-and-so. How many days do you need to process the grant if I give it to you? Is it 5 working days? Is it 7 working days? Is it 2 days? That's why small schools are awesome. They usually only need 2 days. Here in Maryland, it's 5 working days. Illinois was 7. Who needs to sign off on the grant? Here at Maryland, I sign off as PI. My boss signs off as the head of our center. The dean signs off as the signatory for our center institute unit. and the designee of the vice president for research's office signs off. Four signatures. What that means is I need to make sure to tell those offices that there's a grant coming on this date from my group so that someone is there to sign off if the dean is on vacation or has meetings or whatever. Plan ahead. You need to ask for a link or a copy of all university policies that can apply to your grant. Usually this is in a handbook section or a research guide in your vice president for research's office. This is where you find out things like the FNA rate, like what they want you to charge for things, how students get handled, all of that. And also, be very explicit and ask the question and make sure it's either in that guidebook or written in an email. This is the authorized university indirect FNA rate. Get a digital copy of that piece of paper agreement that has been signed by the external group and your university. There are grants that require that you include that in an appendix to show that that's the rate your university must charge. Okay, so I basically keep a file of that kind of stuff. Common university processes. For a single institution grant, draft documents, like the budget and the budget justification, go in 10 days prior. They want to see a draft before you finalize all your thought processes and negotiated everything with all your staff. They want to see what you're thinking to know whether or not it has implications for the university. This is particularly important for something like a challenge grant, which you should definitely start on a year ahead of time. It takes forever. But this is also important for something like a grant that's $250,000, where it could be more complex and more money at play. They want to see it the sooner the better. Most universities want to see the final documents 5 working days prior to the external deadline. So if your grant is due on the 20th, which is a Monday, they want that grant the Monday prior by 8 a.m., which means you actually have to have it in their email queue that Sunday night before, or that Friday before usually, because I don't want to work on the weekend. So what that means is you've just backed up your grant by 10 days almost. Okay? Yeah.
You might cover this in a bit, but I remember hearing at some point that universities can only submit one grant for each competition. Is that true?
No. It depends on the competition and the university.
Okay.
So there are competitions for like NSF and NIH where the university has its own internal competitive process that happens months before the deadline, where they select a proposal to go forward and that's the only one they can work on. In humanities grants, generally speaking, that doesn't occur.
Okay.
What does occur in humanities grants is you cannot PI more than one grant in the same competition. We ran into this for a myth for our digital humanities startups. We submitted 4 last year in the last round. Last May, we submitted for a September start date. And we had one where the same guy was PI twice. That just, it was something that I totally overlooked because it was a new rule, which was my mistake because I assumed the solicitation was the same from the year previous when I'd written in one. It wasn't. So we actually had to do a last-minute change of PI and move the staff members around. So it's still the same project team because we're all still contributing, but the person is the PI in name instead of the other person.
But yeah. This is also why it's so important to talk to your grants coordinator, because if you're submitting 2 proposals to the same solicitation that are due the same day...
They might need more time.
So they might need more time to work on it because they're... Especially in smaller universities where they only have one person doing all of this, it's not an issue where you're doing the same thing, so it takes less time.
Each one is different.
Each one will take exactly the same amount of time because each one requires. And I've been in the situation where it actually has seriously complicated the factor because I've been the point person for both grants, and so it's like, okay, are we talking about grant A or grant B? So.
I encourage you, most universities have, their research office has a sort of listserv of all the grant opportunities and will notify you of things where they can only sort of submit one external for a proposal. And they'll put that call out usually like 6 months before they actually need the proposal internally. Get on that list. Usually your research office, and actually most university libraries, have a grants database as well. Get access to that. It's useful to look. I actually, and I know Simon does this as well, annually reread all of the solicitations that happen in our discipline in digital humanities, And we actually also look at the new solicitations and new competitions or divisions that are announced to see if they could potentially apply to digital humanities research. But that's because that's part of our job as developers in digital humanities that focus on multiple projects. For you guys, you probably don't have to worry about that. Yeah.
Oh, I just want to make sure I understood. Did you say that MEH, you can only be a PI on one project, period?
No, one competition in one competition cycle.
Okay.
So they happen annually. You can only submit to the digital humanities startup once. You can submit to the digital humanities startup forums, and you could also submit the same year to an IITDH as PI. It's about the competition, not about the funder or the division. So, for example, I right now am on four MEH grants. One is PI, one is a subcontract co-PI, and two is staff. And those are all compliant with the university rules and the MEH rules about how that can work.
Okay.
So, what happens when you have grants with subcontracts? The subcontract budgets usually, so the one that Simon would have had to fill out if we were doing a project, they want to see a draft of that 14 days prior because they have to go deal with somebody else's budget office and they have to go track down who that person is. When you tell them you're going to do a subcontract, be nice to your grants officer and tell them the name of the person, the email, and the phone number that they should be calling at that institution. Don't just say, call the grants office at Clemson. They're going to be pissed because sometimes there's like 25 staff members. Don't make them work for it. Be a good collaborator.
And what that means is ask your collaborator who that person is.
Yeah.
And do that as early as possible. The
and
last thing
yeah.
you want to do is hand them 10 days before the grant and say, hey, this is a subcontract.
And if they don't know, make them find out before you start the process. And also ask, and this is just a practical thing that I have learned after making a couple of mistakes with subcontracts, ask that you get CC'd on all of the subcontract discussions so that if something starts to go sideways with your subcontract, you can intervene as the person who's potentially running the entire project. It's just good practice, and it also means that if they screw something up, they can catch it before they finalize it and sign off on it. Draft documents on a subcontract or a grant with a subcontract on it. Budget, justification, signed subcontract documents. So when Clemson approves it, they sign a form that comes with a letter that says, we've approved this budget with a cover letter that says, all of this has been approved and authorized. You can now use it however you'd like. I have to, for my university, for Maryland, submit my budget, UMD's budget, my budget justification, which has his subcontract figure on it. I also have to submit all of those signed subcontract documents that Simon has. Usually that happens between the grant officers, between the two institutions, but I want a copy of all of that. Because sometimes your grant coordinator leaves the university in poor circumstances. And that happened to me at South Carolina where I went through three grant persons because one got pregnant and left, another one took the job and then backed out of the job 6 months later because they decided they wanted to be someplace else. I kept a copy of all of that so that I could have it when the next person came in. It's just good business practice. Final documents 5 working days prior to the external deadline. So if you notice, our subcontract and our regular grant have the same 5 days at the end, but I've actually had to back up the process by almost an entire month. Okay? What that means is I'm actually writing 60 days or 90 days before these 5 days at the bottom. Okay? Because I need to have argued out with my project team all of these issues to get to this subcontract negotiation. So don't wait to get the process started. Departmental coordinator. If you deal with the department straight on and they deal with the grants person for you, how many days before the university does the department need the grants? So does your chair need to sign off on it? Do they sign off on it in print or digital form? Ask that question, because at South Carolina, it's still in print form, which means I literally had to walk around campus to get the 11 signatures that were needed on a multi-department grant. It's annoying. I hated it. Who drafts the budgets? And this is the question for you guys after living through the budget exercise. Are you required to draft the budget as the PI or project director? Or is the budget person in your department going to do it for you, or are they going to send you to the grants person? Ask this question before you start writing. Do not waste your time drafting if someone else will do it for you. That's the nice thing about having a university. Will your department compile your submission? One of the funny things that changes depending on your university is whether your university will submit your grant for you into grants.gov or whether you as the PI are required to submit it to grants.gov and just provide your university with a copy of it. Okay? So grants.gov is the electronic submission system. Some universities will say to you, you've got to go create an account there and you've got to do all the work to put it all together in the right form and the PDF package to go online. We just want a copy. And then if you win, we'll get involved. It takes NEH usually 2 weeks to open an account for you, which means make sure you open an NEH account now if you're planning on submitting a grant in September. Just a good idea, or even in May.
Do you trust the grants office to get that done correctly? I'd be reluctant to let it out of my hands.
So here's how this works for me, and I know Simon works the same way. What we provide to our grants office is the finalized versions of all of the Word documents. So every word in the narrative correctly formatted exactly the way we want it to appear. At Illinois and South Carolina, I would also go ahead, because they have to be submitted as PDFs, I would turn those documents into PDFs with the right name, and then NEH uses a PDF compiling system just like we did with the external grants thing that you saw, but it's a weird one, and I can show it to you, where you attach a file and it gets embedded into the NEH cover letter stuff. I actually will compile the entire thing, including all of the attachments already in it, and I will give that to the grants officer, because I know then that everything that a reviewer is going to read, I have seen and signed off on, and it's not going to get changed unless the grants person comes back to me and asks me to change that Word document. This is where working in Word documents or in Google documents are really useful. If they're going to argue with you about something, do it in the Word version. Don't make it in your PDF. It's super annoying to have to completely renumber pages. Which is the other thing I will say, do not number the individual components of your grant until you are absolutely certain that that piece of thing is going to be the final agreed upon issue. Because there's nothing worse than your narrative stretching an extra sentence and going to the next page, and then you have to completely renumber the rest of your package. So this is where Adobe Acrobat Pro comes into play, where you can take PDF and you set the numbers and it automatically says the next section starts with this number and the next section starts with this number. Okay. And ask this question of who needs to sign off. Get a list, know their names, email addresses, and go introduce yourself to those people if they're like your dean or your chair, just so that when your stuff comes across their desk, they make the connection that you're an enterprising staff member or faculty member who's trying to help them do their jobs for the university.
Yeah. Just one very quick thing. If you do an NEH fellowship, which is not a digital humanities grant, those must be submitted individually. And
yeah.
The NEH will kick. So that's a different kind of, that's
right.
The individual research.
And again, the solicitation
yeah.
clarifies that and
yeah.
says that you can't submit as an institution, you have to submit as an individual separately from your institution. So again, the moral of the story is get a grants.gov account. It's also, by the way, where when you have to submit like your interim report and your final report, and you get an eGEMS account, which is like the grant management account. Those things are nice, too, because you no longer have to do anything in paper. So this is the illustration of the subcontract-contract process of review. At your level, you guys are going to have reviews between your project teams. So my team here at Maryland will do a review and make sure we all agree about everything. Simon's team at South Carolina will review its work plan, its budget. They're going to make sure they agree about everything. We're likely going to exchange emails and negotiate about things like budget pieces and work plan and things like that. Once we've both agreed and signed off, our project directors usually will have some sort of conversation about who's going to be the primary institution, so who's going to be the one that actually submits the package, and who's going to be the subcontract institution. And that's then when the subcontract budget gets processed and all of that. Okay? This is where knowing your grant rates is useful and figuring out how you can get more money out of a small grant. So the project directors usually are going to have some conversations among themselves. Oftentimes, that's where somebody like me comes in as a project manager, where I negotiate things with them like, you can't buy 100% of Kirsten Keister because there isn't 100% of her available. You can only have 20%, okay? So this is where it's sort of above the sort of level of project you guys are operating at. but it's useful to know when you're buying someone else. This could be the OIT guy who controls your computer programmer that you need access to. Having conversation with him about who you get access to when. Once your project, you've sort of satisfied, you all agree, your project, your grant, goes to the departmental grant coordinator. So whoever it is that's going to help you with this process. Usually that is your secretary or your business person, whoever it is that in your department or your college or your institution, you know, they've sort of assigned to help you with the process. Once you're happy and the package is ready to go, this is then when the signatory lines come into play. So the department chair and the deans take a look at it, they sign off. Oftentimes the university grants person signs off, and then it goes to the, finally to the granting agency. This is a much more elaborate process than most people realize. And oftentimes this process is iterative, where you can get up to the department grant coordinator and they'll see something wrong and shoot it back down to the PI or the director, who then has to go back to the project team and negotiate something on the work plan or on the budget. So leaving yourself enough time for mistakes or errors is a big thing. Because otherwise you're like Simon and I, you end up awake at 4 in the morning fixing things because there's a 5 p.m. deadline the next day and it's not fun. Your granting agency, when it goes in the hopper for a granting agency, they have a body of reviewers that they have solicited. They send your grant to those reviewers, and those reviewers are the ones who are going to evaluate it. They are outside the purview of your organization, and oftentimes on grants, you must list who your collaborators are so that there is no conflict of interest with your reviewer body. And we have this a lot here because we submit so many grants that we have a list of people that have to excuse themselves because they're actively on projects with us. And we've actually had staff members who actually have to change the review group they're in, because when the review group gets put together, the proposal that comes to them is one of ours or one of our collaborators. So they have to excuse themselves from the process because of conflict of interest.
If there is a person on your review board that has a conflict of interest, how do they get reassigned?
The granting officer at the funder will do that. They read all the proposals when they come in, and they usually catch that before it even makes it to that review panel. But there have been situations where something has been reviewed and sent to review, and then the person who's on the review panel says, oh, wait, I didn't realize this was so-and-so. I need to step away. And what they do is they shoot an email back to NEH saying, or to NSF saying, I can't do this. And they usually get excused from that panel, and they get put on another one. And there's actually a really great diagram on NEH's website of how the review process works for NEH. Basically, what they do is they'll get 140 submissions, and they'll convene, say, 10 panels that each review 14 submissions that are randomly chosen by area. So they try and group things together to make it easier for reviewers to speak to those things. So, like, put all the art history things together, put all the history things together, put all the lit chin things together. But your reviewer teams are actually multidisciplinary or disciplinary. So they try and create sort of groupings or peer groups of things to look at so that you're not looking at, for example, you know, a hypermedia project that is only interested in 19th century material and, like, a traditional monograph project. They create equilibrium. And you can actually ask NEH. Jason does these talks, and Jennifer does these talks all the time about how they run their process, and there's a great diagram on their site that tells you exactly what they do. Jason Rohde, Jen Cerventi, Brett Bobley, yeah, they're all really great. So what do? Reviewers are required to be familiar with the call for submission, so they have to go back and read the solicitation, or they're supposed to. They usually receive a checklist of the requirements that you're supposed to fulfill as a grant. Usually they're broken into pools by topic or theme and then assigned out to the reviewer groups. The reviewers offer an initial assessment. So they say, yay, nay, I like this, I don't like this. They then are brought into DC, in the case of NEH, or brought into NSF in Virginia, and they actually have in-person meetings over a series of days where they argue out everybody's assessment. So they'll say, one person can love your project, one person can hate your project, and they argue until there is consensus about whether that goes forward as something that should get funded. They then, out of their assessment meeting, create the ranked list saying yay or nay to things and provide a recommendation to the funding agency officers, so somebody like the head of the division or the program officers. At that point, you would think that that means you get money. It's actually not. When you get money is when they turn their recommendation over to the chair of the agency and their board, and they then look at it and say yay or nay. This is where your program officers are super useful. They can become advocates at the highest levels for the projects that they think are important. How NSF is slightly different from this is that when the recommendations for funding are given to the officers, there is a National Science Foundation board that is divided into divisions rather than one universal board because they have so many proposals. They have proposal boards by type and subsets, and those boards and subsets then say yay or nay on things. Mellon works the same way to some extent, except Mellon does not have to bring in reviewers. Your reviewers could be just the program officers on the competition. And the program officers on the competition make the recommendation to the Mellon board. This is why it is so hard sometimes to get private funding, is because it's one person or two or three people making decisions. But it also is something that can be highly competitive because you don't get 150 applications to Mellon. Mellon only accepts things by invitation only. You can submit a letter of interest to them, and this is how most private funders work. You submit a short letter of interest, usually it's 3 to 5 pages, saying, this is what I'd like to submit to you as a proposal. They then invite the full proposal, and at that point, that's when you start this process of creating an entire grant draft. Okay? Private funders are fun. Private funders also can tell you what to do with your money in any way they would like because they are private. They are not bound by Congress, rules of law, or propriety at all. They're great people. They just, you know, have more control. So what are common mistakes or things you should always do? Always check your final grant submission against the rules of the competition for these things. Page length, the funding amount, and the status of the PI. Can the PI be a graduate student? Depends on the competition for NSF. Can the PI be internal faculty here? Can the PI be staff there? Funding amount, it sounds stupid that you think everybody pays attention to how much money you could possibly win. It's actually a more common error than you think. When you're making all those budget changes, you lose sight of the fact that there's only a certain amount of money in a competition, and you think nobody's going to notice the extra $15 that you tacked on here or there. They will notice the extra $15, and you get thrown out of the competition because you asked for more money than you should have. Okay? It's just like kindergarten, where the teacher wants you to line up and follow things. Line up and follow things, and usually you get to go to recess or to lunch. It's a good thing. Also pay attention to the university rules for things like the tuition and fees and the amount of salary allowed. Okay? Keep a copy of every grant that you are part of for your own files. You notice my insane filing system. I have a copy of every grant I've ever written in every version, in part because I teach a class like this now and choose those as examples. But also because when I have to justify something like a promotion or a pay raise, I can show my work product. Finally, ask for comments from reviewers. One of the most shocking things to me is that you can ask NEH to give you the reviewer's comments. They're obviously anonymized, so you don't know who it is. But you can ask for comments, and there are people who don't ask for comments. So when you're successful, you ask for comments. When you fail, you ask for comments. Why would you ask for comments if you're successful? So you can do it again. You know then what resonated with the reviewer about that particular grant. So I wrote one, and one of the things that they wrote in the review comments once was, it is so nice to see someone recognize the value of the humanities for this particular discipline. Well, hot damn, I'm going to keep doing that. You know, it, again, reviewer comments. Why would you want reviewer comments when you're a failure? Fix it, revise, resubmit it, but also... what's the other thing that critical comments can do for you?
Make sure you're not making mistakes.
Make sure you're not making mistakes that you need to educate yourself about. There's already a tool out there that does this. This person obviously didn't pay attention to this or that. It's a way to improve what you're doing.
Do you ask for comments during the submission?
No.
As you submit or after you find out the notice, whether you're accepted?
Comments always come after you submit from reviewers. Comments from program officers can come from up to 6 weeks before, But comments from reviewers only happen after the competition has been completely closed and all of the notifications have been made of who's won and who is not, and all of that paperwork has been processed. Because sometimes what has happened is someone will get told they're on a wait list, basically. Like, we're funding 1 through 7, and if somebody in 1 through 7 drops out at the right moment, you can get moved from the terminal reject pile to the oh, we're so happy pile and not know it. So they hold everything until the entire process is done, and then you get your comments back. Yeah?
So does that mean that after everything is done, you contact...
Yeah. So you'll get an email that says, we're sorry to notify you that your competition, you know, that your grant has not been selected for this round of competition. Usually they include something like, we were pleased to receive 40 submissions. We chose to award 6 in this cycle. You know, we encourage you to apply again. Please contact odh@neh.gov if you have any questions. Sincerely, whoever the program officer is. So I keep having Jen Cervenzi recently. And so the first thing I do when that email comes across, before I've even told anybody else the status, is I reply back and I say, Jen, thanks so much for letting me know. I'm sorry to hear that we didn't make it. Can you send me all of your comments? Thanks so much.
And it's okay to be outraged at the ignorance of whoever it was who reviewed you. And to be
speaking of that.
That one person turned the tide, but at the end
welcome
of the day,
to the understanding section in Grant Frost's group. Grant processes has human variables that you cannot control. If somebody had a fight with their husband, wife, child, kid, got hit by a car, had a car accident, they can be in a very bad mood. If you unintentionally got a reviewer who has an issue with a discipline, a tool, or a methodology or a theorist, and you use that person's name in your grant, sorry, you lost out on the luck of the draw. Don't take it personally. It just happens. Grants will take as much time as you allow. And this is something Simon and I have come to after doing this a lot. If you start your process 9 months before something is due, your grant's going to take you 9 months. Because you will continue to come back to it again and again and again and again and again and again and again. And you will talk about it and you will weigh it and you will whatever. For us, we set a finite amount of time that we will engage with a grant. So if we start the process 9 months before because it's a complicated grant, we say we have to have all of this settled 3 months from now. We're only going to allot this amount of time to write this grant and to move on because your time is money. People will wait until the last possible minute and it will drive you batty. If you say it's due at 5 o'clock on Friday at 459.00999 whatever, that's when you'll get it from someone. So when I need something from people, particularly those external to Myth, I tell them that I need it sometimes with some people 2 weeks before I actually need it. Other people, I tell them a week. And then when they don't do it, I send them that reminder email and say, you were supposed to turn this in and you didn't do it. You know what? I'm going to be generous. I'm going to give you an extra 4 days. They have no clue 90% of the time that they're still operating within my allowable window for their ignorance of time and money and all of those things. I do this with our staff members and myself as well. If I know that something's going down with somebody, I will say, you can have 6 days, when actually they have 9, because I know on day 6 they're going to come to me and say, listen, my kid's got the flu, there's this thing going on, I need another day, can I have another day? It's a project management strategy for myself. I appear generous, I don't get frustrated with them. And this is something that I've learned over time because I used to tell them, get it to me on the day that I needed it. And then I was the one staying awake all night long to get it done for the next day. So I don't do that anymore. The reviewer's comments can change with each review. Just because you put it in the first time and it got comments that were not favorable doesn't mean when you revise and resubmit that it will come back again. Okay? Every review panel is different. Sometimes you lose for the luck of the draw. And here's something that is like my own OCD as a reviewer. Little things matter. Proofread your application. If you have spelling errors that are like common spelling errors where it's obvious you haven't run spell check, that annoys reviewers. Like, that shows you don't care about what you're submitting. Notify all of your grants office of the submission well in advance. When we decide we're doing a competition before we even started the process, I send off an email to our grants person saying, hey, by the way, it's likely in late September you're going to be getting something from us, even though it's 6 weeks or a year in advance. Just so you know, it's going to be coming. They then drop that on their calendar, and they go ahead and make space for us now. Same thing in terms of the little things matter, page numbering. You know, be kind to a reviewer. If you're going to reference a page number or an appendices, make sure the appendices actually matches up with what you said. You know, this is no different than doing a publication. Pay attention to the little things.